Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Back at you with the Believe Aztecs Basketball Podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. Thankfully, I got that one right. We had already restarted this thing three times because I couldn't speak. I am Matt Scraby, and I am with Aztecs Hall of Famer Randy Holcomb. Randy, how are you feeling today? It's Christmas week.
And I feel great, man. It's it's a great time of year, family and the likes, man. It feels really, really good to be here with you, man. That's for sure.
Yeah. I'm actually not much of a Christmas light guy, but this year been really enjoying the Christmas lights for some reason. Just driving down the street, going anywhere, I just look for Christmas lights.
I hear you, man. I'm gonna be real honest with you. I haven't even gotten through all of our Christmas lights yet. I've only gotten the tree up, so I guess at some point over the week before Christmas Day, maybe on the eve, we can do some sort of like lighting party. You know?
Okay. What I mean? Okay. All right. Hey, at least you got the tree. At least you got the tree. That's the most important part. In 2020, we do what we can, and then we move on. And
that's a fact. That is an absolute fact.
Yeah, and that's what the Aztecs are going to be doing here after losing to BYU 72-62. Now, we're going to get into this game throughout the entire episode, but we're also going to talk about the ranking real quick because the AP ranking has been released and the Aztecs have left the AP ranking. They are no longer a part of the top 25. They were number 18, but this loss to BYU kicked them out. They're like the first team looking in, I believe. So that's, I mean, they're going to get back in. It's just hard to lose one game and then get kicked out. But that's what happens when you're ranked number 18. And quick thoughts on the Aztecs dropping out of the ranking, Randy.
You know, I think it's – I don't put much stock in it. You know, I mean, I don't know if you necessarily play for – it's so early in the season, and I don't think that, the guys should necessarily be playing for a ranking. You play to, win championships, right? So that progression over the course of the year is the most important thing. You can be ranked now and then you lose in the conference tournament or you lose in the national tournament. What was it for? Right. You know, yeah. I think that this game, showed me a lot about the team, and I know they learned a lot about themselves. I was thoroughly surprised at some of the things that I saw. And we'll talk about that as we go, but I was surprised by what I saw.
Yeah, I was a little surprised as well. It seems like it's a team that has leadership, but at the same time, they're young and they don't have guys that are I don't know, maybe not have been in those situations before playing in those big games. And it was also weird. I mean, they're playing at home at 2 p.m. with no fans. It's just this whole season is going to be weird. And I like what you said about not putting too much stock into the rankings because this season's going to see so many different cancellations, postponements, teams not being able to play a certain amount of games. It's just going to go up and down. So I guess I'm going to stop living by the rankings now that I've just decided that right now.
If you think about it, what algorithm can they put together to for the ranking process, right? If I forget which team on the East Coast is, canceling games left and right. I think it's Virginia, somebody like that. They're canceling games. How do you quantify ranking them, or how do you quantify not? So this year is one of the years that it's like you just win as many games as you possibly can.
Yeah.
And you try to get on the roll and down the stretch, we'll see how it plays. Nobody even knows how the end of the season is going to play out or how it's even going to work out. So
it's you just got to keep winning. Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, everybody's fighting for this chance to play in the NCAA tournament. And last year, it didn't happen. This year, I'm thinking it's going to happen. We've had a year to figure out how to do this thing, but at the same time, nothing's a given. Nothing's a given. Right. So you just don't know what's going to happen. So like, I like that, that strategy, which is win as many games as we have on our schedule, and we'll let fate take us wherever we need it to take us.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, the Aztecs, after starting out 5-0, they did have a tough one against BYU. We were all pumped up after they beat Arizona State, and they ended up ranked number 18 in the country. But losing to BYU, it wasn't a terrible game by any means. It was probably, if I'm asking Brian Dutcher, he'll say that's the worst game they played all year, and that's mainly because they were playing catch up all day long. To give them credit, they did end up catching up and tying the game at 61 with 1:56 left. But the first half was rough for the Aztecs. They missed a lot of shots. They made a lot of mistakes, a lot of turnovers. I believe there's 8 turnovers in the first half. And it's too hard to come back, and it's too hard to win a game against a good team like BYU that has a size difference in their favor when you're turning the ball over 8 times.
Well, the first thing is that if you ask Dutch that question and he gives you the answer that you said about there's a bunch of different perspectives that you can take in terms of that being the worst game that they played. You can also say that was one of the best teams that they've played.
Good point.
And I don't want to take anything away from either of the teams, but. Man, they were big and they were physical, right? And they were, the advantage that we had in the previous game against Arizona State, we didn't have that same advantage playing against BYU. They were around the bucket. They were playing out of the pick and roll. Mm-hmm. They were able to roll their bigs to the basket. They were catching the ball, keeping it high, very fundamentally sound. And if you made a mistake and let them set their feet and shoot a three, it was going in, right? So, but with all that being said, the game was really, really close. It was a lot closer than what the score would indicate. That 72-62, that was just free throws at the end of the game when you're trying to file a catch up. But they just didn't make enough big plays over the course of the game. Mm-hmm. And just ran into a very, very physical, tough, gritty team.
Yeah, we already saw this kind of against Pepperdine when they went down by 16 in the first half. They ended up coming back and winning that game. Pepperdine's not a bad team by any stretch of the imagination, and BYU's, it's just a better team. I guess on paper, you could say they're a better team. So going down 15 points in the first half, going into the halftime locker room, knowing that you need to have your best half of basketball to win the game. It's a tall task, especially against BYU during Pepperdine, or when they played Pepperdine and they beat Pepperdine. You know, I think a lot of people thought they could do it, but BYU was just one of those beasts that were like, ugh, because I was watching it in studio because it was at 2 p.m. on Friday, and we're all like saying, oh, this is not looking good early. It's not looking good early, which it wasn't looking good early, and we'll get into them catching up and tying it, but what kind of things can you say about going into halftime down 15? Like, what usually is the thought in the locker room? Is it, okay, we got this, or is it, ooh, man?
Well, I mean, I think in this situation, it was a, ooh, man, right? Because, the Aztecs really weren't playing bad. If you look at how they were playing, they weren't playing bad. Everybody doesn't play great every night. Jordan struggled, right? But they took Jordan out of the game. It wasn't like he was free to roam and do whatever. They had a scheme, right?
Yeah.
Matt played, and I know we're going to talk about that in a second probably, but
go ahead. Let's go into Matt Mitchell right now, because he dominated the game. So he was the star of the Aztecs, and let's talk about him.
Okay, so with Matt, the thing that's special about this kid is that his ability to post, right? And and the way he's built, he is built strangely, right? If you look at his physique, right?
Yeah,
he's got super long arms and a barrel chest, right? And
it makes him
he can play the guard position and he can play the forward position. And typically in basketball, the position that you can guard is the one that you play. He can guard two positions on the floor very easily. And he's a positionless player himself.
Yeah.
Him being able to play one-on-one and being able to shoot the ball is exactly what BYU and teams like BYU can't scheme for. But if you are a one-dimensional player, and I don't want to Jordan hit it.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but he's a three-point shooter. He's a shooter. Everybody knows that.
Exactly. Exactly. So if you take that away, right, he becomes it nullifies him, right? He has to figure out ways to get going when he can't get to the 3-point line. If you watch BYU, we can say what we want about them, but they were denying the ball, they were switching out, they were making shot opportunities difficult. And even with all of that, the Aztecs did not play bad. They actually played pretty good. You know, they just ran into a tougher team.
They did run into a tougher team. And that's interesting that you say that about Matt Mitchell and Jordan Shackle. Now, Matt Mitchell, when he was having a tough day against Arizona State, he still made his presence known by getting to the line, I believe, 12 times. Right. And Jordan Shackle, when you're a guy who is a shooter who likes to play from the perimeter, you're not going to be able to get as many free throws. You're not going to be able, so you need to find a way to impact the game elsewhere. If your shot's not falling, a guy like Jordan Shackle, though, you always let him shoot because you know that he can make any of them. But when your shot's not falling and you're feeling like your shot's not falling, you got to find a different place on the floor to show up and to impact the box score, quote unquote.
You sound like a freaking coach that's been doing it for like 30 years, bro.
Okay, I mean, thank you.
Because that's spot on. That's spot on. The key to being a good scorer, most young players don't understand this, right? And I'm going to give this game for free. The key to being a great scorer is getting to the free throw line. You just said it, right? If you can figure out ways to get to the free throw line, you stop the clock. If you stop the clock, you get points when the clock is stopped. If you make your free throws, you put a foul on the other team. There's a foul that is accumulated against the player, and there's a foul that's accumulated against the team, right? Mm-hmm. So in that, they have to guard you differently. Jordan, one for nine from three. At some point, you got to say, "I'm just gonna put my head down, go to the basket." Yeah. Right? You know what I mean? Like I'm just at one of four or one of three. You got to just say, "Listen, to get myself going, I'm just gonna go jump into somebody and scream."
Yeah, scream.
As opposed to, and as a shooter, you still got to shoot your shots, right? But you also have to. Jordan for me should not be a one-dimensional player at the collegiate level if he aspires to play for money at the higher levels, right? Yeah. You cannot be a one-dimensional player at this level. You have to be a scorer at this level, and then at the next level, you become a specialist, so to speak. So,
yeah, you could become like a Kyle Korver or someone like that who
exactly
kind of just sits in the corner and makes living shooting threes, which is exactly a nice living. So,
exactly.
Jordan Shackle, though, Matt Mitchell, like we were talking about, he came back after ASU and he had his 35 points. He shot 12 for 17 from the floor, five threes, five for nine from three, and he was six for seven from the free throw line. Now, here's the biggest story for me is that he scored 26 points in the second half. They don't have Matt Mitchell in that game. That half is not even as close. It's not even 10-point victory. It's probably a 25-point victory. And he hit three threes down the stretch when he needed to. So we talked about a couple weeks ago. Who's the leader of this team? I got my answer, Matt Mitchell.
Well, I'm going to agree with you there. After watching him play, I think that he's definitely I don't know how vocal he is because I don't know him as a person, but I think that his play on the court is showing that he's the guy, right?
So yeah.
if he's going to get to the free throw line that many times, that was the most impressive for me. And the fact that they were, you know, the team understood that they needed to get him the ball. Now, whether that came from Dutch and the coaching staff or the players understanding that, they threw him the ball over and over and over again. And he was getting to the basket. Mm-hmm. Some of those were and ones on post-ups. And like I said, he's built like, you know,
he's built like a tight end.
Yeah, he is built like a DN
or even a UFC fighter because he's got he's got the athlete build and I'm very jealous of his long arms and his athletic build. But you're right, he's just such a match or he's a matchup nightmare. And after the game, the BYU head coach said we didn't know really what to do with him because we put him down, we defend him in the block, and then they send him outside and he's hitting threes on us. Right. And when we put him on the block, he's either drawing a foul or he's getting easy baskets.
Exactly.
So
exactly
that proved a lot to me. And it also proved to me that he came back to school for the right reason. He tested out the NBA thing. And last year I didn't see this kind of play from him. And I think this year he wanted to go into this season proving that he can be an all-around player and showing these NBA teams that he's the guy who they can develop into anything that they want because he's good at everything that he does.
Well, I would agree with you there. I don't know if he's an NBA player. I think that he'll get a chance at the NBA, but I think he'll make his bones internationally, right? I think that if he's smart, he'll go play for – you know, he'll work his way up to paying for a couple million bucks over in Europe, someplace like that. I don't necessarily know if he's a guy that's going to stick in the NBA.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you're a guy who's been through all that. So,
right.
So, yeah.
And, you know, but with that being said, I don't want anybody out there to say I'm hating on him or whatever. I just want to be very clear in that, you know, playing at that level is about having one thing that you do so great.
Yeah,
and a couple other things that you do really, really well. He does everything pretty good. But the one thing that may be his saving grace is his ability to post up. Right, his ability to post up at the guard spot is uncanny. Yeah. I think that if he continues to if the team wins out and they make some noise later on in the year or late into the year. Mm-hmm. He'll have a chance to go in the first round. But I also think that if I know the game correctly, I think that he's a guy that'll make his bones in Europe more than likely.
Which is not a bad thing at all, because there is a lot of good basketball being played in Europe.
Absolutely.
And a lot. And it's also kind of it's not a minor leagues because they are a professional league. It's right. More of like, if you want to see if you are good enough to take it to the next level, you go to Europe, and then you can see if you're ready for the NBA. Because then once you get through Europe, you're playing the second best of the best in the
right.
world.
Right, right. Agreed. I mean, it's not a knock, right? To be realistic. And I think that, again, you can go over there and you can make a very, very good living. I just think that I was saying mm-hmm. that because I don't think that he should approach the situation trying to make the NBA. I think that he should approach the situation trying to win as many games as he possibly can. And again, without that 35 points, right, you know, mm-hmm. they're not even in this game, which is to what you said. Yeah. But if they could have got somebody else going and he scores 26 as opposed to 35 and they win the game, that looks 1,000 times better on his resume. Because those kids at BYU are the types of kids let me not say what I was going to say about steroids, okay. but that type of frame on a kid is what mm-hmm. you're going to run into in Europe times five, right?
Oh, okay.
Those BYU kids, there's some guy named Big Sasha, right? That's 7'2" tall and he weighs 300 pounds and he's from Russia, right? And trying to, you know, you got to be able to play in that environment with basically college rules and try to be successful in that.
No, that's a whole interesting other talk that we can. I would love to go down that road another day, because I would not want to play against a 7'2" Russian guy. Just saying, not my thing.
Right. I deviated there.
No, it's okay. You know. That's okay. I found it interesting. But 7'2" Russian guys, like. It just reminds me of Rocky IV or something like that with Ivan Drago.
And it feels like it too. I felt it. It feels like it too.
Those guys are like bricks. There's brick houses that you just put in the middle of the lane and hopefully you can't move them.
Right, you're right.
If Matt did score 26 points and Jordan Shackle, say, has 18 and they win the game, it just looks so much better.
Right.
But you had no one else supporting you here, so I'm not putting much into this loss other than the fact that it was a bad day for everyone else and a really good day for Matt Mitchell.
Absolutely. Again, this BYU team, we talked about this last week. This is a good test. They don't have any sexy guys on that team, right? We have sexy players.
Yeah.
San Diego State has sexy players, right?
Yeah.
They have a group of kids that just want to, they just want to beat you, and they don't really care how they do it, right? And they'll get ugly to do it. I was disappointed. I'm going to say this. I was disappointed in our bigs. I think our bigs got whipped, right?
Okay.
All night long.
Explain.
We got out rebounded. They got a bunch of second chance points. We didn't guard the pick and roll very well. They were just more physical. They were just brutal. And I think over the length of the game, I think they just wore us down inside, right? I think that they just wore us down. BYU is always going to shoot the ball extremely well. But we were too easily boxed out. We didn't play with enough energy, with enough fire. Our big that played great for, and I'm
Nathan Bensa, he had foul trouble.
Yes, and again, it fouls mean that you're not playing within the rules of the game, right? So if you play within the rules of the game, you stay on the floor. You figure out a way to stay on the floor. And even when he was out there, he was, you know, he was getting mauled for the most part. He didn't show up to me at all. And I hope he does hear what I'm saying. I hope he takes it personal, you know, and comes back out and plays the next game better. But he just, it just, there was no fire in his eyes. There was no wanting to compete that I saw. I thought that he was just a little bit soft, right? And if he's going to play that way, then there's no way that the team's going to be successful.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, coming with the praise that you get against a team like ASU, and then you're going to be heavily criticized once you have a great game, especially when everybody's talking about you. And this is the Nathan Mensa that everybody wanted to see, quote unquote, is what, you know, Brian Dutcher said last week. You can't come out and you can't expect to just kind of hide in the background. You got to take over the game. And I like how you said that. If you're fouling, you're not playing within the rules of the game. That is an interesting way to say that, and I love it because it explains what a foul is 100%. And when you're fouling a lot too as a team, you're just taking the flow. You're giving the rhythm to the other team. You're not able to start anything when you're just stopping and starting, having the other team shooting free throws. Right. It's just kind of demoralizing.
Right. Here's the deal. Like if you get a foul and it's a one-off situation. That's something different. Yeah. And I'm not saying that this was necessarily Nathan, but sometimes guys will hide and they will foul just so they don't have to play, right? They will foul and, you know, and get subbed out because they don't want to take the whipping that they've been taking. I'm gonna hope that wasn't him in that particular situation, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I will say this, they were just a ton more physical and wanted to get to the ball more than we did. Mm-hmm. That's where the game was lost at. It was lost on the interior. Now they made a lot of shots and they had some guards that were able to shoot three well, but this game was a lot closer. 61-61 with, you know, basically 2 minutes to go.
Yeah.
We need a rebound and a block shot. We need a possession. We need a shot changed. And that happens on the interior. That doesn't happen on the perimeter. That's
basically what not the only reason he's on the team, but Nathan Mensa is put on the team so that he can redirect shots and redirect guys who are driving the lane with his long arms and trying to block the ball. And when you got four fouls, you can't put him back out there. He's not able to be, you got one more to give. Well, let's say this thing goes into OT, you need him in OT. So you're playing more tentatively as well with four fouls because you don't want to foul out. But all interesting stuff, all stuff that Brian Dutcher is going to have to address with his team and figure out with his team, because they are going to get right back on the horse and they're playing St. Mary's tomorrow. So to close out the game against BYU, I think I'm going to say it like this. It's a one-off. Let's see what happens going forward. If we see more of the same, then we might have a problem here. But right now I'm just taking it as just another game that they lost. What do you say about that game against BYU?
I say that it was a good test. I think that that this is the best team that they've played today, right? And St. Mary's is going to be another one of those kinds of games where it's going to be a grind out game where they don't particularly have sexy players trying to get to. Arizona State has two kids that are trying to get to the NBA.
Yeah.
San Diego State has two kids that are trying to get to the NBA. Mm-hmm. St. Mary's and BYU have kids that when they're done playing here, it might be in the back of their mind, right? But they're living for today, right? St. Mary's going to have a lot of those same kind of kids. And if we can't match that energy of the day or for today, which would be game day, right? You know, we might run into the same issue. So I'm hoping that it's a blip.
Yeah.
But we'll see, because that St. Mary's team is pretty good.
They are pretty good. They're 8-1. They just beat up on Colorado State 53-33, which Colorado State's a Mountain West opponent. And they only scored 33 points in the game.
Oh, well,
Colorado State did. I mean, that's just not good. This is not good. And they've had issues with COVID so far this season. So that could be a reflection of not being able to practice at all for the past like weeks and all that stuff. But St. Mary's, they've never been a pushover team. They're in the West Coast Conference. By the way, the West Coast Conference is quietly becoming one of the strongest conferences this year, because my alma mater, San Francisco, they beat Virginia. That's yeah. basically the only win that I've seen them have, like, that's big in the last maybe, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years.
Right.
But they also have Gonzaga in the conference, and they have some really good teams in that West Coast Conference.
I was going to say that's the biggest reason why, though. If you look at Gonzaga, right? Gonzaga raises the play for everybody else. You have to start in order to even be able to compete with them. You got to be able to play at a certain level. Mm-hmm. That also forces the other teams in the conference to recruit the same sort of way that Gonzaga does, right? They go out and get the players that they need. So. With that being said, that conference is getting really strong, and they play the game the right way. They play a traditional, not a traditional brand of basketball, but a very unselfish and thoughtful brand of basketball that is hard to beat. Right?
And
Colorado State only scoring 33 points, they must have not practiced for 2 or 3 weeks, not just yeah. one. You know, to only put up 33 points, St. Mary's did a heck of a job defending them, right? One of the two.
I'm just going to go with, you know, just because I don't really like St. Mary's that much, I'm just going to go with Colorado State in practice. That's what I'm going to go with. This just popped in my head, but since we're talking conferences, real quick, football, yeah. Aztecs football is trying to get out of their conference because they're just not getting the due they deserve. What do you think about San Diego State basketball in the Mountain West? Because the Mountain West basketball conference is a little bit stronger than the football conference, but they still don't get the love that everybody else does in the Power Fives.
I think it's important for San Diego State to leave the conference and try to get and work to get into Pac-12. I would be trying like heck to get into the Pac-12 because, again, the money's bigger for the program, better competition, and it's easier to get the RPI higher when you're playing against high level competition all the time. Also, you don't have, and not to say that San Diego, I want to go back to something that I said in our very first episode.
Okay.
I said that they were playing cupcakes in their non-conference. Well, I gave the inclination, right, that they were playing cupcakes in their non-conference start of the season. They've been playing some really good teams, right? I want to go back and set the record straight, right? I don't want to run into Dutch in La Jolla somewhere, and
I heard what you said about our cupcake conference.
But they've been playing some really good teams, right?
Yeah.
Typically that has not been the case. Right. But I think that the other thing that's helping college basketball as a whole is that a lot of the kids who have aspirations, of playing in the NBA are taking different routes. They're not really coming to college, which means that, you know, juniors and seniors are staying in college, right. Finishing their career, which makes for a better product, which makes for, you know, a better team long term. Right. That is another reason that I would say to get to the Pac-12 now, because teams like Washington and Washington State, and I think that the Aztecs are better than those teams today, right? If they had to play those type of teams, I think that they're better than them today.
It's good to know. It would be awesome for them to get into the Pac-12, and there's all those different crazy rules about the Pac-12 and whether or not they want to cross recruiting boundaries, and I think we talked about it last week. It's really
but well, again, I mean, I don't know how that could be the case if you have USC and UCLA in the same market, right?
Yeah, and, that's true.
And you know, they and then two, recruiting is a national thing. You can go almost anywhere and pull a kid, right? If especially when you're talking about coming to California,
yes,
for sure, you can pull a kid out of Iowa. Right.
Yeah.
is ranked. I don't know what they're ranked, 3 or something. Yeah. Who missed out on that? Who messed that up by not going to get Garza from Iowa bringing them to the West Coast? Right.
Yeah.
So I think there's ample opportunity for all those teams to go out and recruit and do it at a high level.
I agree with that. And it's also, I've always said this, how easy is it to sell San Diego as a place to go live?
I came on my recruiting trip. I came on my recruiting trip, and this may rub some people the wrong way. Well, and I'm going to end this with, I did get my degree, but I came on my recruiting trip and didn't even go on the campus, right? I never even set foot on the campus, right?
So it's a nice one. It's, you saw the pictures.
yeah, exactly, right? So I think, well, let me not lie. I did go to the academic office, I believe, and I think I went to the arena, saw the arena.
Yeah.
But after that, where's the paperwork, right? You know, I'm signing up for this. This is an easy deal. This is an easy win, right?
Yeah.
So it shouldn't be that hard to recruit. I think that, you know, crossing those boundary lines, but it is more work for the assistants who need to be working anyway, right?
Yeah.
To get out there on the road, you know,
Do some basketball. Yeah, I think that what Dutcher's done really well is get the transfers to come in. He plucked away Terrell Gomez from Cal State Northridge, and there's just these little guys, not that little guys, I'm not saying their stature, but there's these guys that are out there in these small schools that just fit perfectly for the Aztecs program.
Right.
Brian Dutcher knows, you know, to go to those guys and say, hey, come to San Diego for a year. We're going to be ranked. We're going to play some big games. Probably going to have a tournament run. Come on over.
Right. Well, and I agree. I think he does a great job. He's one of the best coaches in the country at going and getting what he needs. Mm-hmm. A lot of times coaches will go out and they'll recruit things that they don't necessarily, they shine and they look good, but when you try to put them in that system, it doesn't work.
Like the Kentucky's.
Yes, exactly. Which is one of the reasons.
We talked about that last week too.
Yeah, exactly. That's why you get transfers, right? Because it didn't fit.
Yeah.
So, but Dutch does a great job of going out and getting guys that work for the program.
He certainly does. All right. So the Aztecs are taking on St. Mary's tomorrow. Then they do not have another game unless the Aztecs pick one up. They do not have another game until January 2nd. So not sure if we're going to have a podcast next week. We'll see how the game goes against St. Mary's. And we might just give you a short little 15-minute update on the game next week. But that's it for this week. The Aztecs fall out of the top 25. They are ranked they're probably like 26 or 27 after their loss to BYU. So it's going to be another battle to get back in the game, get back in the top 25. But there are tons of teams losing all over the place, so it's not going to be that hard. If they keep themselves around the top, they'll be in the top 25, I believe, up and down all season long. But let's hope that they've learn from this BYU loss and go forward.
Absolutely. I think that there's a silver lining here, right? You lose to a team, you can go back and you can regroup, right? And I think that that's exactly what they're going to do. But I do think that, again, we have to Nathan Mensah has to come to play.
He does.
Game in and game out, right? Mm-hmm. And these are tests. So again, if you want to have an illustrious career, these are the games that you have to come show and show out, right? And again, I was thoroughly disappointed in his performance.
All right. Nathan Mensah, I hope you heard what Randy said, because it's just going to make you want to play better and play harder for the next game. So we love you on this program, Nathan Mensah. We're just giving you a little bit of tough love, just a little bit of tough love, which is not anything bad whatsoever. But we'll see where they go from here. Again, this is the Believe Aztecs Basketball Podcast and the Believe Podcast Network. Believe has a podcast for every one of your teams and the only place with a show for your favorite team. We believe in our teams. And with this being Christmas week, I hope, Randy, you have a great Christmas or a great holiday season. And I hope everyone out there listening, we've already had a really awesome return on what we've been doing so far, and I really appreciate that. If you want to give us any feedback, please hit me up at Matt Scraby on Twitter and Instagram, and then Randy is at Alfred's house. Is that correct?
That's right, at Alfred's.
Okay, house. At Alfred's house. So we'll close up this week. Hope everybody has a very happy holidays, and we'll be back with you very shortly here on the Believe Aztecs Basketball Podcast. I'm Matt Scraby. That's Randy Holcomb. I was gonna say good night, but it's not night, it's morning. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.